Hi, everybody. Michael Ferraro, LLA, Leading Lifestyle Agent. This is episode one of the LLA podcast, where I'm going to be bringing to you some of those influential people, not only inspiring in my life selling real estate and have been, and also just people in real estate in general. So it was so fitting for me to bring on for episode number one of the LLA podcast someone who is so inspiring from the beginning of my career, and that's going to be Mr. Jack Cotton. Jack, thank you so much for having us or being on with us today.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to this today.
So let me give everybody out there listening and watching this podcast kind of some information on how you were so instrumental in me and my career. When I first started real estate, and I know you were a big part of the Sotheby's company and have been for and are currently, correct?
Right.
When I first started in real estate, I was with the Sotheby's company, and I had a manager at the time who's a great man, and he said, if you want to sell real estate, and do you want to do luxury real estate? And I said, absolutely. That's my dream. That's what I want to do. That's why I got into this business. And I did not know anything about the luxury market. I didn't understand it. I didn't come from that. We talk a lot about that for people who know me and my story. He pointed at the bookshelf and he said, you need to go get that book. And I looked at the bookshelf and it said Selling Luxury Homes by Jack Cotton. I had no idea who you were. I never read the book before. And that was my first introduction. And a lot of people who get into real estate, they read Million Dollar Real Estate Agent by Gary Keller, and they read all these different books. This was my first real estate book. So thank you so much for writing that book and launching me into the inspiration that, for me, I eventually changed my name to the Luxury Lifestyle Agent before changing it again to the Leading Lifestyle Agent. But when I was the Luxury Lifestyle Agent, I wanted to be like Jack Cotton. And so, again, thank you so much for coming on. And I want to get right into it because there's so much to talk about. But could you hold up that book? This book. Now, for people out there, and we're going to talk to Jack. Jack's going to talk about his story in real estate because it's a well-decorated, amazing story. And he's going to talk about his views of luxury and current status. But this book right there, Selling Luxury Homes, if you're a real estate agent and you're dreaming about scaling up your business, giving yourself a raise, or just getting into it, you need to go pick up this book. You need to read Jack Cotton's book because it will open your eyes. It will inspire you. Again, long-winded, but thank you, thank you, thank you, Jack, for everything. So let's get right into it.
Okay.
Reading a little bit about your bio, it says that – and now where are you located currently?
Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Austerville on beautiful Cape Cod.
Beautiful Cape Cod. Now, reading a little bit about your – what was that?
Sometimes it's beautiful when the sun comes out. We're waiting for the sun, but anyway.
It's poking out. It's going to come out. Absolutely. So reading about your bio, it said that you worked in a real estate company, but you started in your college dorm about 40 years ago. How did that come about?
Well, actually, this is May, so it would be actually 44 years ago this month.
Wow. 44 years ago.
1974.
Wow.
That was in my last year of college, and I kind of always knew I was going to real estate. I thought I would go to commercial real estate because I was a finance major in college, and I went over to Boston interviewing at the major commercial real estate companies, and I'm a Cape Cod boy, you know, and small town. We still have like 4,500 people in our town. It's not very big, and I just felt like I was going to get crushed, spit up, chewed up, ground up, beat up. And I said, there's no way I'm going to survive in commercial real estate in Boston. So, you know, I really want to use my finance background, but I think I'm just going to go home. I don't have any money anyway. I had a 1967 lime green Ford Maverick with a black racing stripe down the hood, the three-speed shift on the column car. It got rear-ended in a freak snowstorm in April of 1974. I collected $600. And I did not fix the car. So that was my seed money to start my business. $600 went a long way in 1974.
Yeah.
And also, my father made a bet with me. It was the dumbest bet I ever made and the dumbest bet I ever won. But he said, if you can do college in 3 years instead of 4 years, like take extra courses every semester and kill yourself and hold down three jobs at the same time, which all of which I did, I will give you $100 a week for 10 weeks when you graduate. So I won that bet. And I get my $100 a week for 10 weeks, plus my $600 from the car accident. And he had a plumbing supply warehouse, so I had a free office space in the corner of the warehouse with stacks of toilets on one side and stacks of sinks on the other side. And it was so pathetic and sad. I used to actually make my own signs. I mean, I, you're too young to understand, but in 1974, there was no word processing. You couldn't even make a photocopy. There's no such thing. There's no faxing. There's no email. There was no, you know, electronic printing. You wanted to make a sign, you got plywood, you painted it, and you got stick-on letters, and you stuck them on there, and that was your sign. I mean, it was a really sad beginning, but it got better over time.
Wow. So that was the early beginnings. So how does Jack Cotton go to sell luxury real estate homes? How do you sell luxury homes from where that story ended just now?
I wish I could say it was a carefully designed and executed plan. It was a complete and total accident because, again, back then I was 21 years old. I looked even younger than you do now. And who's going to trust? Plus, I grew up in this town. I decided to work in the town I grew up in, which is a double-edged sword because I knew people, I knew the area, I knew the geography, but also people knew me from when I was a kid. And you're like, are you kidding me? I'm not going to list my house. He's an idiot. So I was competing with people who were seasoned. You know, they were in their 60s and had gray hair like I have now. They had wrinkles. They had wisdom. And the clientele, I mean, there's no kids buying and selling real estate. Everybody who was buying and selling real estate in any price category back then was also older. So how did I – my goal was to equalize the playing field between myself and the other more experienced practitioners at the time. So I – divine guidance is all I can really attribute it to – told me that I had to be seen as an expert. Mm-hmm. And the best expertise I could develop, in my estimation, according to my divine guidance, was to become an expert in markets and value. So I took every appraisal class I could find. I even traveled to Indiana and took a two-week appraisal class where there was the second outbreak of Legionnaire's disease and one person in the class actually died.
Wow.
Anyway, forget all that. Anyway, so basically, you know, back then, in the old days, I mean, I had a car. We didn't have to ride horses to listing presentations or anything like that. But speaking of that, there was no such thing as a listing presentation. And, you know, 44 years ago, we had the entire alphabet that we have today. We had all 26 letters, A through Z. We had the whole alphabet. We had it all. But no one had ever taken the three letters C, M, and A and put them together into a CMA. What people did in those days was a lot like when you watch Million Dollar Listing today. An agent walks into a house, really look around, they don't write anything down, and they just shoot a number off the top of their head.
Right.
And that's how real estate was done back then. So I cannot take credit for stringing the CMA letters together, but what I did do is a narrative appraisal every time I got the chance to pitch a listing. So I would do a 45-page narrative appraisal with charts and diagrams and pictures of the house, and understand again, no word processing. I was so poor in college. I had to buy it. You know, you have to have a typewriter back then, a typewriter. Mm-hmm. And so the only typewriter I could afford was a Remington typewriter that was on sale because it typed in script.
Wow, it typed in script. That's pretty, it was high end back then.
It typed in script, which nobody really wanted script. So I probably got it for $40, you know?
Okay.
And it had a fabric ribbon. So I'm typing all my CMAs, 45 pages with a fabric ribbon with a Remington manual typewriter in script. Mm-hmm. And every time you made a mistake, you had to either get a little paintbrush and wipe it out, or you had these little pieces of paper with white and you'd strike over it. It's called whiteout. I mean, it was a different thing back then, but I had to outwork everyone else. I had to be a bigger expert than everyone else. And people were impressed with my work. And so as I talk about in my book, I found my first maverick, a person who was willing to take a chance on a new person who's audacious and different and outside the box. And she was a widow by chance. And I did my whole analysis and the floor plans and the whole 45-page appraisal. And I got my first luxury listing. And it was, at the time, it was $90,000, which back then was a pile of money. If you understand, a Harvard MBA was getting $15,000 a year. And that was like huge money back then.
That was a Harvard MBA. Wow.
Yeah, huge money back then. So I was able to sell that house, and then that led to another one, then my work. And then attorneys would see my work. And what I've still learned even today, and I still get business from today, wealthy people need CMAs on a regular basis. They need them once a year, actually, for estate planning purposes and for tax avoidance, tax minimization purposes. And so people liked my work, that I just outworked everyone else. And they liked my expertise, and it just gradually grew and grew and grew to the point where Sotheby's International Realty thought enough of my company to offer to buy it for me. And they did.
So you, and I mean, again, I don't want to give up all the secret sauce to everything, because I think it's important that people do pick up the book and read it in there. And it is a great blueprint on how to start this business. It's not everything, but it will launch you to where, if you're willing to work for it. And so Sotheby's thought so much of everything you had created. Now, how many years of business did you accumulate of success? And what were some of those statistics, if you know any of like volume, that Sotheby's said, this guy is unstoppable. We're going to make an awesome business.
I don't know if Sotheby's ever said he was unstoppable. And that was actually probably one of the two smallest companies they ever bought. So,
but they did think enough that's not often that they do that. So, I mean, what does that look like? I mean, just for people to get an idea, because some of the people who are going to watch this are brand new to the business. They don't understand how much success you've had and how what that number looks like.
Well, we were very small. I had a few agents. I mean, it was not big at all. But we were doing, I can't really divulge a lot of stuff, but I can say that we were doing maybe $250 million a year in sales. And that was the highest sales per agent by a factor of probably 10 than anybody else in the entire Cape.
And so you were doing $250 million in sales. And what year was this?
Every year. But the final year, my best year ever, which was, I don't know the exact number, it was 250 something. That was probably 2004.
So to get people understanding, in 2004, how many was that total in the office, or just yourself, or?
Well, it was like a team office. It was like a small boutique. Yeah.
Okay. All right. A lot like something I run right now. And how many agents was that?
I don't remember. Maybe 15 or I don't know.
Okay. And $250 million. Beautiful. Again, people who are going to watch this that are out in the Midwest and kind of understand how that accumulates. We're here. This is the Northeast. This is out of Massachusetts. I'm in Connecticut right now. When you were doing 250, how many, if you can remember, what's the average sale price of those, and how many transactions does it take for someone to get to that number?
Yeah.
And that price point.
That I don't know. Yes. But I'm guessing our average transaction was around, between $700,000 and $900,000 is what I'm guessing.
Okay. So the average transaction was $700,000 to $900,000.
I'm guessing.
Okay. And how do you remember about on average how many actual transactions your team was doing?
Well, that would be probably 250 if you think you would that be about two if you divide it up somewhere in there. I don't know.
Okay.
We were doing for a small little company. For example, our biggest competitor had 125 agents.
Wow.
We were doing the same business they were doing.
And you were just that, so much of professionals and experts that you were able to, it was not the volume, it was the quality over the quantity approach.
We were highly profitable.
Yeah, I would say so. it's very, and reading, and it, exactly what you talk about, finding First Maverick, how you're doing a lot of this stuff, that's exactly the approach that I took, which was, again, you instinctually knew that you had to be the expert. But before, you know, you were my mentor in a way to tell me that I needed to be that. So that's what I worked to become. And then I think one of the big tips that you just said, which is what I find now working a lot in the exact same market, I'm in that same market you were in, but I'm in Connecticut, Lord Fairfield County. The financial situations, financial well-beings of a lot of the people back there who are coming or affluent, the CMA is very important. Them understanding the financial status of their properties and the things that they own are all part of their yearly taxes, is all part of their wealth account, and giving them that information is so valuable to them. They want to know that. They need that information.
And they don't want it from just you either, because think about this. Wealthy people, they have a yearly meeting with all of their advisors. They meet with the physician to find out about their physical well-being. They talk to their accountant about their economic well-being. They talk about their financial planner once a year. They talk to their insurance agent once a year to get a yearly update on all their stuff. Why wouldn't they talk to their trusted real estate advisor to get a year, to get a yearly update on the value of their prized asset in Connecticut or Cape Cod or Ohio or wherever. I mean, we should be doing this for our clients every single year. We want to be, the goal is not to be a real estate agent. The goal is to be a trusted real estate advisor. You want to be their trusted advisor. So even if they're having occasion to buy a property in Florida, they'll call you to say, hey, we're thinking of buying a house in Florida. What do you think? Should we, blah, blah, blah? How should we do it? Do you know anybody in Naples or Palm Beach or wherever the case may be? You want to be their go-to person when they have a real estate issue or question. And that requires a lot of non-compensated work, potentially, up front. You know, like I do, I just wrote this new class. It's a two-day intensive luxury class. Where it's like 8 hours a day for 2 days. And our inaugural class is back in January. And right when the class is starting, I get a call from this guy who I've been doing CMAs for every year because wealthy people did a CMA every single year for their tax planning purposes. It doesn't have to be an appraisal. It can be your CMA. But if their property's in a trust and they're trying to minimize estate taxes, for example, they put the property in a trust and a certain portion of that trust, of the assets in that trust, go under IRS rules to the beneficiaries every year. So when the trust matures, all that real estate is now in the ownership of the beneficiary. So when the owner dies, there's no estate tax. Mm-hmm. When the estate tax is 50%, which it is when you're rich, when you have a $5 million house, that's a $2.5 million tax you just saved. You think people are not interested in saving that? So, I mean, we have one, we did one, and I saved her just on one piece of land. It probably saved her $4 million in taxes by doing these. So anyway, so this one guy I've been doing the yearly CMAs, and he calls me up the day before my class starts. I'm like so wound up and getting ready. It's a maiden voyage. I've got 32 people for this new class, you know, and he decides, oh, I want to make an offer on this house across the street from me. I don't have time to come and look at it, but I'll turn that off. Sorry.
That's okay.
I want to buy this house. So while I'm teaching this class, I'm negotiating this deal for $6 million, and we finally put it together during the cocktail reception of the first night. But it was all because of, I was his trusted advisor. He wouldn't think of doing something. He didn't even see the house until after the home inspection. But I had that relationship from doing his yearly valuation analysis work. And that's what you do. You want to become a trusted real estate advisor. Is it a long-term process? Absolutely. Are there quicker ways to get business? Absolutely. But you have to be on the two tracks at the same time to really build your business. Most people in real estate have a practice. And you don't want a practice. You want a business. Business is what you can sell. No one buys a practice.
Got it.
Nobody buys a practice. They buy a business.
Jack, you growing up, did you grow up affluent?
No, I grew up with a single mom and two sisters.
Same way with me. This is the biggest question that I get, and maybe you get the same thing. I didn't come from that life. I don't know that life. I can't work with those people. We don't have anything in common. Blah 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 blah. Do you also think that's one of the biggest roadblocks people have, and how can they overcome that? To say, I too can do that.
I was just too stupid to know that I couldn't do it, frankly. I can't do it, you know. But yeah, I grew up in my town, it's changed quite a bit. Back in those days, you were the townies, like I'm a townie.
Yep.
And you were the rich summer people.
Yeah.
And there was nothing in between. Today, there's more of a middle class. But no, we were the townies. And then I would always look with envy at the rich boys with their chinos and their blue blazers and their topsiders and their Boston Whaler boats, and they'll go to the yacht club and the tennis. And I'm like, you know, mowing lawns. I mowed off 3 toes one day mowing lawns. So, you know, working jobs all the time since I was 14. And I mean, but I looked at that, and people who I grew up with, some of them just hated the rich kids. They hated the rich people, even though we depended on them to live. I never hated them. I just wondered about them. I never thought I'd become one, but I thought it would be, I did think about it. And I used to make decent money as a kid mowing lawn. I had a lawn mowing thing, and I had a lot of different businesses. And so I was always well-dressed. People thought I was rich because I was always well-dressed. Mm. Except for my Maverick, I always had like a kind of a cool car. My car was a, you know, but it was all stuff that I did from my, on my own.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just didn't have, and I went to a really rich school and everybody was rich. And I thought, you know, it's possible. It is possible. And I'm still, so I've done okay, but you know, everything's relative. So I mean, I talk to people who make $1 million a month from dividends or whatever, and you meet people who make even more money than that. But it's all relative. I look back to where I started, you know, wondering if we're gonna be able to stay in our house or not, to where I am now, and I feel good about it.
Now, your ability, so that's the thing is, for me, you know, when everybody, and I talk about this with a lot of people, it tends, when you get deep down, when you get underneath the content, you start to get into the mindset and the actual person.
Right.
And for me, I just have that thing in that why, we call it, that says, I'm going to choose this. This is, I'm stubborn and, you know, dumb enough to just believe that it's going to happen and I don't look at the opposites, and we go for it and we get it. And it seems like for you, it was the same way, that that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to work for. But for a lot of people who have that thing, that roadblock that I can't, in their mind that they tell themselves, what's a piece of advice that you could give to them to say, listen, I said I was going to do it. I believe it. Same thing with Mike. And what would you tell them as far as advice if they came to you and said, I'm afraid to sell, I'm afraid what they're going to say or something like that?
Well, first of all, I would begin with a quote, which is, if you believe you can do it or you believe you can't, you're right either way.
Right.
So just decide which one you want to do.
Right.
And I was just, I never give up. I never gave up. I was never a quitter. You know, I'm just never quit, never give up. Too stupid, too dogged, too, just don't give up. And you can do it. And just make up your mind. I tell people, just make up your mind, just do it. Mm. And I call that the big O. The big O is the big objection. What am I going to do when I go to a listing presentation and they say to me, oh, how many million-dollar homes have you sold?
Yeah.
How many million-dollar homes have you listed? And you know the answer is zero. What am I going to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so people don't go. They sit on the sidelines and they don't participate because they don't have a great answer. And different people have advice about what to say. Like, I've heard people say, well, change the subject and maybe they'll forget.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed about rich people is that they're really not that very stupid. They're usually pretty smart. So they don't typically forget. You can't really throw them off track and distract them.
Right.
So you say, well, team up with a more experienced agent. Maybe you can win there on the team approach.
Right.
And I guess you could do that. I mean, I'm not going to disparage that because I think that could work for some people. But my approach was that I'm going to turn around and make it a plus. You're right. You know what? I've never sold a $1 million house before. You'll be my first one. And you know what, Mr. Seller, Mrs. Seller? I'm going to make my mark on your house. In fact, the last thing I think about every night before I go to bed, and the first thing I think about every morning when I wake up, is going to be finding a buyer for your house. It's my 100% focus. As a matter of fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to take one more listing of $1 million until we have an accepted offer on your house. Let me ask you this. How does it feel that somebody that's driven and focused to getting your home sold? And when you talk to a person who's self-made, they're going to see a little bit of them in you.
Mm.
This strategy may not work as well on second and third generation people as it will on self-made people, but that's it's always worked for me.
Interesting, interesting.
And you know, think about the market leader. The market leader who you're competing against probably has a dozen or more listings. They cannot give personal attention.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the market leaders in your marketplace and look at how they do their business. They don't even show up half the time. They have a real sense of entitlement. They don't even show their listings. They don't do anything. They just have the sense of entitlement. So if you can turn that around and make the opposite of that an asset for you, that's how you can succeed. That's how you can break in. That's how you can overcome the big O. The most important thing to remember in all this is that we never compare ourselves to a competition. I never talk about a competition, even though deep down inside, I want to disparage them and tell my sellers how rotten and incompetent they are and all that stuff. But that's not luxury. Luxury is beyond compare. When you're a luxury agent, you are beyond compare. And I challenge you or any of your viewers or listeners to send me, and I'll send them a free book. If they can send me an ad for where Rolls Royce says how crummy Bentleys are and that they're better than Bentleys, then I'll send them a free book. But it doesn't exist because that's not how luxury works. Tiffany doesn't disparage Van Cleef. BMW doesn't disparage Mercedes. Luxury stands on its own. It's beyond compare. So talk about what you do. Come up with your points of difference. You can design your points of difference around the opposite of what the market leaders in your market do, which is what I do, for example. But I never disparage my competition until I get home. I sit down with my dog. I'll tell him all the bad stuff about my competition.
Yeah, you let him vent at night.
He's actually enthralled at me and like sort of, you know, has a little smile. But anyway.
Yeah, you're 100% right. That when I was really getting into understanding marketing and studying and presentations, we talked a lot and I learned a lot about, you know, Nike's first symbol was beat Adidas and it flopped. Right. There was no such thing. When it became you versus you, or just do it. It talks the difference between a lot of the cell phone companies, the difference between Samsung and Apple. Samsung always goes after Apple. Apple doesn't need to go after anybody. And that's, they put themselves on that. And if you look consciously, when I do my listing presentations and I do it around people who have been in this business for 30 to 40 years and they have sold hundreds of millions of dollars in real estate. Here I come in as a person who's not even necessarily from that exact town, trying to sell a house and compete with them. It's not about taking them, calling them by name, disparaging them. It's about creating a presentation to show why your product, which is your ability to sell a property and yourself and the trust in yourself, is more advantageous for them and solves more of their problem and helps them more than another person without having to use their name or use their company and everything. It's all about being presented.
I like the political look at politics for just a second here. And look at candidates who talk about what they're going to do and what their positions are. Some, a lot of which may be wildly unpopular to lots of people. Then you look at another candidate who just says what a jerk that person, and all they talk about is how bad that candidate is, and don't vote for them, vote for me because that person's a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't work. It's just, we just saw that happen. We saw that play out.
Yeah.
A wildly unpopular person won the election because the other person had nothing to say about what they are, what they stand for, what they believe in. All they could talk about was how bad the other person was.
Yeah, not to get too much into politics because people go crazy, but you're 100% right. We talk a lot about that, where the person who's the change word as the person who said, well, just I'm better than your other option. And that doesn't necessarily...
I'm the lesser of two evils. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
The lesser of two evils.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've already hit us with so much great information. Number one, if you're getting out there, CMAs on these properties for higher end, why that's so valuable, being a trusted advisor, the big O, if when people should be listening to this and playing this over hundreds of times to understand that objection is probably what stops a lot of people. So right. Since you cannot tell me anymore that you don't know what to say, I could tell you what I would say, but you heard that right there from Jack Cotton. What an amazing way to handle that. So there's so much in here that I want to unpack, but I really want to get into today and your feeling on today's luxury market and climate. And this would be more for not necessarily people who are looking to get into it, but this is the people who are maybe already a little inside of the market currently. And we'd love to do just as an advisor role from you, from one professional to another, where do you see the luxury market 2018 with the current climate, specifically Northeast, because that's where we are. Where do you see everything going?
Well, you know, the Northeast. Real estate, to me, real estate is the beginning, the middle, and the end of everything. I love real estate. And real estate in a rare and beautiful place is even more valuable. And to me, I'm biased, of course, there's no place more rare and valuable than the Northeast. I mean, we have incredible, beautiful shoreline. We have great cities. It's a great place to invest in real estate. People in the high end know that if you want to invest in something, you invest in something dear, which means rare, hard to duplicate. And that's what we have here in the Northeast. And that's what really defines luxury. People want to have things that aren't run-of-the-mill. What people don't want is commodity anything. Mm-hmm. They don't want, and every so much in our lives now is becoming a commodity. I feel so bad for kids today, like your age and maybe a little bit younger.
I appreciate you think I'm a kid. Yeah. I love to be a kid again.
Just think about cars now. You know, every car now is a commodity. I'm a car person. I can't get excited about cars anymore because they're terrible. Mm. We have a parade on 4th of July and all the cars that are 60 years old are in the parade. And I always say to old timers, Can you name one car being made today that will be in the parade 60 years from today, and people will go ooh and ah over it? You're gonna what? Look at a a Prius and go, oh, that's so awesome. I don't think so.
It might be the Tesla, like the DeLorean, maybe one day.
So basically, people are really looking for things because as everything becomes more commoditized.
Right.
People look for things that are less commoditized.
Right.
In their downtime, which is their real estate, and then the people they deal with to get their real estate. You cannot be a commodity agent. You can't do what everybody else does. You've got to do things differently and better, and more importantly, you've got to add value. The perception among people at all price ranges, but especially the high end in real estate, is that you are a toll taker. Mm. As an agent, you are a toll taker on the get your home sold highway or the get your home bought highway. And I'm going to find the agent who exacts the lowest toll in the process, which means the lowest commission. And so to be successful in this business, you cannot be seen as a commodity. You have to be seen as a value enhancer. And you need to be able to demonstrate how you bring more value to the proposition of getting a home bought or sold. And that's how you want to differentiate yourself, is on value. Here's what I do. I think this is worth this much. Here's something else I do. I think it's worth that much. Here's a third thing I do. And I think it's worth that much. And you pull it all together so that you can demonstrate your value when the people are comfortable dealing with you as they buy their non-commodity real estate from their non-commodity trusted real estate advisor. A trusted real estate advisor is by definition not a commodity.
So, man, so much. 2018, the luxury, what's called the luxury market in America, Northeast, dealing with that myself every single day, one of the biggest things always that anybody ever asks me, which is, how is the market? How is the market? Oh, you sell big homes. Is that harder to sell? Do they sell less now? People don't study this every day like maybe we do. Where's your view of the luxury market in 2018? Getting better? Or, you know, people always use the big R recession word, and we're going to have a pullback. Where do you see it?
It depends on how you define getting better. Like, our market's getting better. More things are selling, but prices are not really going up. But they So it's a very value-conscious market. It's actually a great time to buy here now because our prices have not really recovered from the downturn in 2008.
Yep.
So people are buying stuff, but they're getting great value. And that's what people want. My words are, people are looking for compelling value propositions. That's what buyers want. Mm-hmm. So the stock market's it's fluctuating, but overall it's high. You look at Boston, you look at a lot of other cities, real estate's at an all-time high. It's a great time to buy in other areas of the Northeast because real estate is not at an all-time high. You can bail out of a top-heavy market and move into a market that hasn't peaked yet. Mm-hmm. So people understand the value of things in a rare and beautiful place. It's difficult to duplicate. It's not a commodity. So they also understand that real estate is like gold you can use. You know, gold is a great store of value. It's a great hedge against inflation, which all you can do is stare at it and pay money to store it. Real estate is also a great store of value. It's a hedge against inflation on a long-term basis, but it's gold you can use and enjoy and build memories with and reconnect with the family in.
Yeah.
So I still think that luxury real estate will continue to be the other gold. I call it the other gold.
The other gold
you can use.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had such an amazing history in real estate. What's some of the current projects that you're working on? I know you do a ton to help educate people on luxury real estate, both on YouTube and on your websites. I encourage everybody to check that out. We'll post everything so everybody can see where to find you. What are you working on right now? Any projects coming up?
Well, I'm on the back nine of life. I've been doing this a long time. And part of what makes it fun for me and live and fresh and challenging for me is to share my experience with other people, because there was no one, I didn't have anyone like me when I was starting out. And so I get a real kick out of working with people. I do a one-on-one coaching with people. And the funny thing of it is, I've only got one client he's actually a couple years older than me, but all my other coaching clients, I don't really have that many, I don't want that many, but they're all kids, they're all like your age. Mm-hmm. And so I refer to them as my kids. Mm-hmm. And so I help them build their business and to find their luxury brand and to create their points of difference in the marketplace and to break into the luxury market. So that's fun. I like to go out on the road and teach once a month. I do a class somewhere in the country every month, except in the summertime. As you know, one of the downsides of the Northeast is that our summers are exceptionally short. And so I try not to leave here at all in July and August, but you know, right through June, I'll do something once a month. And I've written this great 2-day breaking into luxury real estate class. It's called a 2-day luxury intensive. Just go to jackcotton.com. You can find out everything I'm doing. You can watch tons of free videos. You can get a free weekly video newsletter from me with some tip in there. No cost, no obligation. Just, you know, cancel anytime you want. I don't care. And I like work. I like creating content. I love teaching. I love thinking about the business. It's all I've ever done. Yeah. I mean, from the time I was a little kid, I was building houses and tree houses, under trees, in the woods, in fields, going into my little house that I built at a bad day when I'm 9 years old and having everything be all right in the world because I'm in my own little house. That's a feeling I cannot get away from. And this is all I've ever been meant to do. So I love everything about the business. But now, with the point of teaching and sharing has become very important to me.
Well, and I want to thank you for that, because there isn't a lot of people, and it's just the way it is sometimes in our business, where it's a very highly competitive business, like you talked about. There's not a lot of people who are willing to open up and share and give content and help people grow. And that just says a lot about who you are. And thank you personally for me and my family, because without Selling Luxury Homes, the book, and without you giving that content, I might not be where I am here today. So I want to thank you from everybody. And I could have you on here forever, but I know your time is very valuable. Thank you. And I want to ask you one more thing, which is there anything we should have talked about and that I should have asked you that I didn't get to ask you today?
Well, we talked about a lot of this stuff, but I'm going to tell you one more thing that we should talk about, because people often ask me, what really made your company different? What makes you different from everyone else?
Okay.
We talked about the commodity thing. And quite honestly, Michael, I can tell you right now, there are people who are better salesmen than me, they're better agents than me, they're better marketers than me, they're better recruiters than me, they're better luxury agents than me, they're better at everything than me, except for one thing, and that is answering one question. The question that I ask myself 100 times a day, the question I ask myself over and over and over again throughout the years that allowed me to build a really great company, one that another company would want to buy, was answering this one question. I can answer better than anybody else on the planet. And that's what got us where we are today. The question is this: what is in the best interest of my client? And that's the question that answers all questions. And when you ever have a crossroad, when you ever arrive at a fork in the road, when you ever have a dilemma, when you ever have a situation that you don't know how to resolve, agents come to me as an owner with agents working with me. There's always conflicts, there's always dilemmas, there's always, what do I do in this situation? And I don't care what the situation is. When somebody says to me, Jack, I don't know what to do, I've got this situation, what do? I would always say to them, well, what's in the best interest of your client? The answer instantly appears when you ask that question. So when you ask yourself that a million times a day, you will build a great business, a great following, a great future, a great success, and something that you can look back on and not be ashamed of. You don't have to cross the street and you see somebody coming. You can stand on the sidewalk and greet them because you have to run and hide, because you always conducted yourself that way.
Wow. You heard it. What is in the best interest of your client? What an amazing way to finish it off. I think that probably gets at the root of everything that you would need to do in real estate to make yourself as good as you could possibly be. Jack, I want to say, go ahead.
Thanks. Very easy to say, not as easy to do, but that's what we do.
Oh, absolutely. You have to put exactly like you just talked about. So, Jack, I want to say thank you again so much. Everybody out there, Selling Luxury Homes, Jack Cotton. Jack, where's all the different places they can find you?
Just search me on Amazon or go to jackcotton.com.
So jackcotton.com, they can pretty much get everything, all your books, all your courses, all your videos, all your everything.
Or go to Amazon if you want to get books on Kindle or hardcover or whatever. Either
way. You're also actively, you're selling. So if you're a buyer or seller in your market, they can also go to jackcotton.com, or do you want them to go someplace else?
Jackcottonrealtor.com also.
Okay, perfect. So Jack, So Jack, again, from the LLA family, thank you so much for being here and taking the time. And to everybody out there listening and watching, watch this 2, 3, 5, 50, 100 times. Share it with your friends and family. And anybody who is thinking about this business, buying, selling in the business itself, go to jackcotton.com. Continue to watch LLA podcast. And until next time, thank you very much.